Oh, God, the website's down again.
Oh, have you tried doing an apt-get on the thingy?
Yeah, tried doing apt-get, dist update and all that, and no, it's not doing it.
Have you tried grepping through the logs and seeing what might be going on there?
No. It's obvious to me that the ambient biometric confinement beam is out of alignment.
No, the quantum
cosmic flux burst wibbly.
It's playing up.
What about the trans and the phasic confinement beam fluxing?
No. It is obviously the metaphasic Veteran converter. It's completely out of phase.
I have no idea.
It's a spatial isomatic plasma core.
I've got an idea.
What?
Have you turned it off and on again?
Yeah, let's give it a go.
Yeah, can't hurt.
That worked!
Welcome, dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jay.
And I
came too early.
I came in too early.
Usually the opposite way around at that age.
I'm going to sit in the corner and be quiet this podcast.
I've lost the Dropbox.
There are exercises for that. Anyway, without further ado, strange computing jargon besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo! Woo!
Torchwood news, kind of.
Ooh.
Oh, God, this is distressing. Ianto's shrine to be destroyed.
I haven't even seen it yet.
Some 17 years ago, where did the time go? A shrine to fictional character Ianto Jones was unofficially erected by Torchwood fans at the equally fictional side entrance to the Torchwood Hub in Cardiff Bay. Now it is to be removed. For many years, fans have maintained the shrine, and the management of Mermaid Quay have supported their efforts, turning the quiet corner into a strange tourist attraction for Doctor Who and Torchwood fans. Mermaid Quay said,
"We can confirm that Ianto's shrine at Mermaid Bay will be taken down whilst we carry out maintenance work. This work is required to ensure the lower boardwalk continues to provide a wonderful experience for all our visitors. We hope to work with the local community to explore a new plaque for Ianto once the maintenance works have been completed."
Ianto actor Gareth David Lloyd said of the shrine, Billy Three Names.
"I'm amazed it's been for such a long time as it has. Every year my mind boggles to think it's still there. But also it's very flattering, very moving to think a character I had a contribution in creating has that effect. Made that much of a mark on people."
Thank you, dear.
Anytime.
Glasses off.
Right, mate.
Those wanting a final visit will have until the end of April. Who's to say, though, that once the plaque is up, you can't just rebuild the shrine round it? Yeah. I'm sure
the
we can try.
The chances are people will.
I haven't even had a first visit to it yet.
Well, really? Get down to Cardiff. Quick, smart. Yeah.
I remember the group photo we all sort of had.
Such a moving experience. There's video of Adam sobbing. Really sobbing.
Well, judging by the group photo, it looks like Adam was farting at Tim Drury.
Oh, probably.
We've all farted at Tim one way or another.
Yeah, it's true.
It does happen.
Hi, Tim.
So, yeah, they did put up a little plaque officially.
Yeah.
Which presumably will be taken down, maybe replaced with a
bigger plaque.
Plusher plaque. And then I think the intention is to not have all the other stuff.
No disrespect to anybody there, but it's been up there 17 years and is beginning to look a little bit tatty.
Well, they do go around and clear it every now and then.
I've been getting jip via email and phone calls at work over this. Yes, one of my colleagues, who is a noted despiser of all things sci-fi except for Transformers,
right,
blamed me personally for Indiana Jones and the Cave of the Crystal Skull.
Right.
Has been ringing up going, "This Ianto bloke, yeah, is he real? No, he's a character.
Your point of view.
Well, what the hell? Oh,
well, I think I should have a blue plaque there.
Shaped like a police box. Yeah. More news. Read now.
Oh, okay, okay.
Not
okay.
You. Oh. Adam.
Yeah. Ghosts. Film of the Dead.
Yes. Ooh.
The dead residents of Button House are making their move from TV to the big screen as the BBC's Ghosts starts shooting a film in April.
Ooh.
This is, of course, the original picture series we're talking about, rather than the now several remakes across the globe, as last seen in the series finale at Christmas 2023.
Can I just say the American version is very good?
It is, yes.
I'd like to get a film there.
Really enjoying it.
Ghosts, The Possession of Button House, as it is currently being called, is due to see the original cast return, which is hardly surprising given most of the cast, also the writers and creators of the series.
Yep.
Those very creators clubbed together to say...
We thought we had to say goodbye to Button House at the end.
Oh, it's Martha.
Of the final series. We never planned to come back, but when we had the idea for this story, we all got so excited that we couldn't resist returning to our haunted home for one more adventure. We can't wait to be together and welcome some pretty new faces to tell this soul-stirring tale of life and death.
Yes, obviously no word when it might come out yet, or even how. Will it be a cinema release? You'd assume, but it might go straight to streaming.
Yeah.
BBC iPlayer, who knows?
I'm not sure how I feel about this, because the ending of the UK Ghosts was perfect.
But it also left room for stuff in
between. Yeah, it did, but it was still perfect.
It was perfect, but it was set X amount of years in the future. Yeah.
And that is the problem. They can't keep doing this too long because they're going to start aging.
Yeah.
And be younger in the future.
Yeah, that's a very good point. What are prosthetics for?
So new phases. Does that mean new ghosts, maybe?
Well,
if it's a hotel, if it's set when it's been made a hotel, would it be guests or staff? Mm.
Yeah.
The American Ghosts have got around that fact and introduced a couple of new ghosts into it.
Yeah. What's her name? Patience. The one who was buried underground.
Oh, the Patience. Yeah, the Quaker.
Patience, yeah.
She fell into the well.
She was distressing.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
She was mad.
And there's been a few other ghosts as well, like the one that lived in the back of
a car. Yeah.
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 There's also the other ghost that is occasionally seen up in the attic.
Oh, the student, the schoolgirl.
The prom queen.
Yeah.
The prom queen, that's right.
And
yes.
Of course, then there was Mary who got sucked off.
Yeah. And the headless motorbike rider. We see him sort of tottering around every once in a while.
That's the American one.
Yeah, the American one, yes.
More feedback. No. More news.
More news. Okay. Rob Grant.
Dead.
Writer Rob Grant has smoked his last kipper. He's dead, Dave. Age 70.
Aww.
Best known for having co-created Red Dwarf with Doug Naylor, though Grant left the series after the sixth season due to creative differences. The comedy writing duo started off on BBC Radio 4 on series such as Sons of Cliché, which included a proto-Red Dwarf recurring sketch called Dave Hollins : Space Cadet. They also produced material for the likes of Jasper Carrot and Spitting Image. In 1999, Grant created a special five-part comedy series called Dark Ages, which parodied fears of the new millennium for villagers in the year 999. Then, in 2000, he returned to sci-fi sitcoms with a 9-episode series for Sky One called The Strangers. More on that later. In recent years, there was a protracted court case over the ownership of Red Dwarf, which was finally settled in early 2023. By the end of the year, it was announced that Grant would be creating an entirely independent prequel Red Dwarf series, and Doug Naylor would continue with the original cast and continuity. Since then, Naylor's new series has been shelved, but Grant's prequel is still happening, only now as a book rather than a TV series. It was announced less than a week before his sudden death that Grant had co-written Red Dwarf : Titan with his new writing partner Andrew Marshall. The pair had already written the BBC Radio 4 sci-fi comedy series The Quandhorn Experimentations back in 2018.
Yeah, didn't see this one coming.
No. I'm going to mention the latter part of last year, it all started hotting up as in new Red Dwarf stuff coming out.
Yeah.
And it looked like a rosy future.
Yes.
But that seems to have stalled.
Mm. Yes, Dave cut their funding entirely for new projects, so the Red Dwarf 3-part series was cancelled. Then this didn't get anywhere, but then became a book.
Yeah.
Just as they announced it.
Off he goes.
Off he, yeah. Yeah. He clearly intended to do a big book launch, and he was hoping to get it maybe converted into a TV series or a radio series.
I wonder if they'll have anything like the last book of Hitchhikers, because that was all potentially plot-lined. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't written, so somebody else stepped
he's got
in.
This, hopefully, well, his writing partner's clearly up to scratch on everything, so...
Yeah, and they've worked together for a few years now. Obviously, between them, they'd know where they were going.
Yeah, yeah. So there may be a book in the future.
Yeah, the series could continue with Andrew Marshall doing it on his own.
Yeah.
Any more news?
No.
Any addendums?
No, but I'm addendumed out. I have no addendums.
William Hartnell, undead.
Ooh. I don't think that was meant to be read out. It was a secret.
No, I have no addendums.
No addendums.
And that's the end of the news. Okay, we have all been watching some telly-bobs, kind of.
We have. Mm-hmm.
Telly-bobs.
We've tuned in. Sworn at the system when it kicked us out. And eventually... we've watched some.
I'd like to say the screen didn't freeze on me this time. I got to watch everything.
Oh, good.
And no humongous willies were involved at all.
Doctor Who. Pause for music. Adam, what did we watch and why?
Why is lost in time now? Mm-hmm. But we have been watching Doctor Who, The Wheel in Space.
Not just any Doctor Who, The Wheel in Space, but in fact, a fan reconstruction of Doctor Who.
Apart from the two episodes.
Of Doctor Who, Wheel in Space.
Can I just say, this animation reminded me so much of Castle Wolfenstein.
Really? Mm.
Yeah, obviously black and white, but that type of animation from the early 2000s and that. Really enjoyed it. Adam, we were over to you.
So, Patrick Troughton.
Yes.
Yep.
Second Doctor, of course. Fraser Hines, Jamie McCrimmon.
Yep.
And introducing...
Zoe!
Wendy Padbury as Zoe Herriot.
Yay!
Where she gets a full name check.
Yes.
And like many companions who turn up and don't get a surname in the series at all.
No. Nope. Yeah.
And she's not introduced, or we don't actually physically meet her until...
Episode two or three.
She's lurking in the background. Pressing buttons.
She's in the background in a couple of scenes.
I mean, I must say, for a fan-made a couple of episodes, I was very impressed.
Ah, yes. Yeah. As a fan-made CGI-style thing, which, as you said, is more like the style of a cut scene from 2000's video game.
Yeah.
I have to say... it is miles better, head, shoulder, arms, knees, tails,
I know
legs,
what you're gonna say.
Feet, miles better than Webbed Planet and a Celestial Toymaker.
Oh, boy.
It is far superior.
While we were watching.
I bet, yeah.
I thought you were going to say the Web of Fear.
Sorry, yeah, it's not Web Planet, Web of Fear.
Yeah. I mean, TARDIS Time Girl is the YouTube channel.
Yeah?
Yep. I mean, I think...
well, it's really good.
The animation for the Celestial Toy Maker was rather polarising, because I quite liked it.
I quite liked it, although it suited the story,
but the style of it was still... poor.
But we're not talking about that, are we?
I know we're not.
Although, for me, I actually thought that the animation style was just a little too in the uncanny valley for me.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, certainly for a fan to do this, it's good. I mean, I'm not taking anything from that. But it was just slightly in that sort of weird space where you kind of look at the characters and you kind of think, is there something about it really does not quite look right there?
Do you know what the weirdest thing about it was? The end of episode when the Cybermen were breaking onto the wheel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they all seemed to be, for want of a better word, mincing through space.
Yeah.
There was the guy at the front looked like he was trying to fly.
That's live action, that is.
That was live action. That's what was
God,
actually.
God, was it? That was actually. Oh yeah. My God.
Yeah. That's what they showed.
What were they doing?
That's what they showed.
It looked like they were trying to swim while standing
up.
Yeah,
and he was kind of, you know, flapping at his sides.
But you wouldn't do anything in space anyway. No.
You need propulsion. You need jets of some description.
Or a cricket ball.
Or a cricket ball, yeah.
Yeah, the science in this doesn't bear tourist scrutiny.
No.
Come on, this is Doctor Who.
Admittedly, some of the movements, like arm and leg movements, were a little bit jerky, but apart from that, I mean...
I have to go back to Web of Fear. The arm movements may have been a bit jerky, but the arm length was correct. Yes. It wasn't an extra 2 foot long.
Andrew Marling.
It is. In Web of Fear, the arms are... they look more like Slender Men.
It was like someone had mated with Mr. Tickle. Yeah.
Who hasn't? As an image. Well,
yeah. This is what I have to compare it to. You've got this, which is amateur, but it looks so professional.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas the last two that I mentioned that we're not doing at the moment look anything but professional.
Right, can we move away from the last two that we're definitely not talking about? You're becoming obsessed.
Well, it's...
I would hate to have to divorce you over Doctor Who.
No, what I'm saying is we have to compare it because this is what the BBC is officially putting out.
Well, we've compared it now. Let's leave it alone.
The story itself...
it's a six-parter.
It's a six-parter that could quite easily...
As always.
Yeah, quite easily have been reduced to a three-parter. Yeah.
Probably, but the story was sound, like all the stories. Well, it was absolutely sound.
Possibly, but...
Definitely.
What I mean by it isn't Cyberman centric. It could be any villain.
Well,
it doesn't say the
Cyberman in space. It says the wheel in space.
I know, but it's a Cyberman story.
If they're not in the title, it's not a Cyberman story. It's a story about this wheel in space.
Doomsday?
Well, that's about a piano falling on Rose.
Okay, I'll give you that. Yeah, I mean, it could have been replaced with any other...
Yeah, it could have been any specific stereotypical villain.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I didn't really see why the Cybermen needed this wheel. Yeah.
Snap.
I tried to explain to him that only the wheel had access to the corridor to get into Earth. I assume there's some kind of force field. I think the space station had a force field too.
I think that is it's wrapped down to the science of the time. It was the radio waves.
Well, a few scenes I did find rather unusual was the first time you see the Cybermats. You just see a scientist pick it up like it's his favourite pet. Go, oh, where have you been?
And he doesn't bother telling anyone. Oh, no. They know something's going on and this weird creature's arrived, but he doesn't think to press a button and go, got something going on down here.
Intruder alert.
Yeah. It's like his rabbit had just got out.
It was cute, though. Yeah. Although, my main quibble with the science is the total lack of understanding of how an airlock works. There were several scenes where both doors were open onto space at the same time, and Jamie's standing there next to a door. And Born seemed field. Totally unbothered by the fact that the atmosphere had been field. Sucked out.
Yeah. Quite what the point of an airlock is at that stage. I don't know. But also, the Cybermen apparently blew up a nearby star.
Yeah.
The nearest one would be Sol.
Yeah. Well, assuming it's not that one. But the next nearest one would be about 4 light years away. How long would it take for debris?
Yeah.
Thousands of years, presumably. Yeah. That's a long-term plan. And would it even create the sort of boulders that were coming? They wouldn't. It wouldn't. Gas.
That is one thing I do like. The recreation had what I would now justifiably think of as meteor. There were giant bits of it. While the original footage, there were meatballs.
Spinning rapidly.
This was a story by Kit Pedler.
David Whittaker from An Idea.
So the original concept was Kit Pedler, who was the Doctor scientific advisor.
Unofficial scientific advisor.
Man was a genius.
You've got to wonder if these scientific issues came from him, or he just didn't get a final approval of the script.
I think probably the latter, because he just didn't care.
Maybe he didn't care. I don't know.
Took the money and ran.
One of my major gripes with it was when the Cybermen were having their dialogue with the cyber controller. He sounded so adenoid almost.
Hardly could understand a word.
A couple of times I had to rewind and say, what the bloody hell was he talking about?
Yeah, I picked up maybe one word in five there.
Yeah, and that's on modern TVs.
Yeah.
Imagine what it was like back in the 60s with those terrible mono tiny little
huge
speakers.
Huge 14-inch screen.
Yeah.
Another observation I have to make. Space Command seems to promote the weakest person to be in command of a base.
Oh, Jarvis. Yeah,
yeah, you'd think he'd have had some sort of...
psychological profile.
Yeah,
you
know. Yeah.
He just flipped out completely.
He did.
Yeah.
Quite quickly as well.
Yeah. Jarvis Gordon Bennett.
And I love the interaction between Zoe and Jamie. Talk about brother and sister.
Yeah. Kept on trying to one-up her.
Yeah. Which he had no chance of doing because she was the smartest person in the room apart from the doctor.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I did find it quite interesting. They didn't make a great case of her becoming a companion, I didn't feel.
No, she just hid in the box.
Yeah, she stayed away.
Even often nowadays, in their first story, they'd make a good impression. They give the companion the lion's share of the story.
Yeah.
It's their story. She doesn't turn up halfway through, and even then, she doesn't do all that much.
I think the only
way of doing things.
I think the only factor in her favour is the fact that she realised that her intelligence was short of real world experience. Because we actually had that little conversation.
That little conversation, that scene.
Yeah. Well, she had knowledge, but not the wisdom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That being her motivating force for stowing away.
Yeah, they make a big thing, or she does. She thinks, am I too robotic?
Yeah.
Too logical?
Because Jamie
in a Sidemen story.
Yeah.
And I don't really make any comparison between her and the Sidemen at all. There's no juxtaposition between them.
Back to my first gripe.
Yeah.
It could have been any generic villain.
Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't quite aware of Zoe's origins in terms of the sort of brainwashing or whatever that she went through in order to sort of get this intellect that she's got.
Yeah, no, nor me. I'd never seen this one before, so I've heard it.
Never seen, but I think it's touched upon in a couple of the big finishes.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's all big finish, sort of tidying up.
Yes, exactly.
Accidents from the TV series
have forgotten.
Yeah.
Moments. The first story's over.
It is picked up then, so I was aware of it couple that I've listened to.
Yeah, a big cast as well.
Yeah.
Lots of not much to do, but it does feel like quite a large station compared to most.
Also, a very diverse cast. You have just as many women as men. You have people of all races, all religions, by the looks of it.
Incidentally, it's quite interesting the fact that they rehired a couple of them for her scenes in War Games when she's returned.
It's at least one of them.
At least one of
the women
is rehired for a scene where she's seen wandering around the world again.
Okay.
I haven't checked if it really is the same person or not, or does somebody in the same uniform.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It is, as you said, it's a packed cast because I was interested in the fact that the bridge or the headquarters of the Will, the command centre, is so bedecked and packed out with people.
Why wouldn't it be?
Well, because it's Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough, yeah. Good point.
The best thing I can equate it to would be the Bridge of the Enterprise, with everyone not necessarily central figures, but the part of the background.
Like a proper bridge crew.
What's interesting, this season 5, starts with Tomb of the Cybermen and ends with this one.
Yeah.
In space. So it's bookended by Cybermen story.
Yeah.
This is the Cybermen era, isn't it, really?
They were being promoted as the... Because the Daleks were being...
Yes.
You know, lost
Nation's trying to get his US series off the ground and all that. Yeah.
So a real push was to get monsters and more Cybermen.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed is that Debbie Watling got a credit in the first episode, and it was just her, was it standing on the beach waving from the end of the previous story? You wouldn't get a credit for waving these days.
No. Presumably she must have been paid for that.
If you've got a credit, you've got a payment.
Yeah. I've not seen the Moon Base, which feels like it might be quite similar. A bit based on just CG.
I'm actually trying to think about that because I've actually seen the Moon Base. Yeah, I think it is pretty similar, pretty based under CG, yes.
Yeah, much of course as 10th Planet is
based
under siege. Tomb of Cybermen is something a bit different, I suppose, in that we go to their base.
Yes.
And siege it.
Yeah.
Has this, the person who created this one, done any others? The YouTuber?
A little couple of shorts, but it's the only full story they've done. Mm. It's no small effort, of course.
No.
It's split up into half episodes.
Yeah.
About 12-odd minutes each.
Yeah, because one of the half episodes wouldn't work for us, would it?
One of them we had trouble with, yeah.
It's the, just as when the last Zoe half. And Jamie wandered off to look at the...
That's another thing. I have no idea how the Doctor and Jamie got from the Silver Cruiser to the wheel in the first place.
It's not shown. It's glossed
over. They're
just
suddenly there.
They're on the silver carrier. Yeah. And then the next scene, you have them on the wheel.
Yeah, but so I mean,
it's not in spacesuits or anything.
Not in spacesuits or anything like that.
It's just hopped over.
Yeah, yeah. It was later when Jamie and Zoe go make a big palaver, I don't know, with them in the spacesuits.
Well, that was also quite amusing. The space walking.
Yeah.
It's interesting to note the, what is it? Patrick Troughton was on holiday in half of this.
For the second episode.
Second episode. So the doctor's collapsed in the bed unconscious.
Covering his face.
They really planned it, because he was knocked out pretty much halfway through the first episode. They didn't do much in the third until about halfway through that. So he really, he had one episode off and then half of the one before and half the one after.
Yeah. And the spacesuits were once again used as one of the bounty hunters from Empire Strikes Back.
It's
the same style of. Yeah. So one of them were yellow.
Yes, we can't really tell in black and white schools.
You can't tell in black and white.
I do wonder why the Doctor and Jamie murdered the service droid at the beginning.
Yeah, the
because it didn't
robot.
Actually make any threats to them.
Well, it blew open the. No, it didn't blow.
No,
open
it didn't.
The door.
It
sealed the door to the TARDIS.
Where the TARDIS for was. It. Yeah, it's been. That's almost Warriors of the Deep like in its overreacting.
And was trying to break into the cabin that they were at, perhaps to do them mischief.
He wasn't breaking in. He was had the right to be there and was just going through the door that had been sealed by the sonic screwdriver.
It did flail rather threateningly at them.
and it was also, danger, danger, warning.
It was a bit flaily.
It was also, the doctor was unconscious at the time, so it was Jamie, who, as we know, is a Luddite.
Yeah, and that wasn't the sonic screwdriver, was it? It was a sonic
time
torch
vector
or something.
Generator.
Yeah, it was a torch with a bad attitude.
This is the first time we see the cyber planner as well. We'll see returns in the invasion. See them again after that, do we?
After that, we get the cyber leader is introduced.
Yeah.
Because the next time we see them is Revenge of the Cybermen. Yeah. And I think that's the first time we ever get a cyber leader.
Yeah, and after that, we get the, well, who did, Michael Kilgareth, who did
we had the controller.
We've had the cyber controller before. Yeah.
Okay, so opinions. Adam, what did you think of this one?
It's okay, yeah. It's not the strongest Cyberman story. It's a bit bloated. Shouldn't be six episodes. But, yeah, it's kind of fun in his own way. Don't think too hard about the astronomical science of it.
Oh, also, they're a bit thick, the crew. And what's her name, the one that ended up dead that shouldn't have done?
Oh, yeah.
She told them that there'd been several incidents of the air pressure dropping and then resealing itself. Mm. And none of them thought perhaps that's how the Cybermats got on board. They just didn't put two and two together. Yeah. Where are they coming from?
It reminds me, it's the weird thing, these tiny little balls, a bit like Rover from The Prisoner.
Weather blues. More than that.
Yeah, well, it became bigger, but then the Cyberman grows inside
it. You saw the Cyberman hatch. It was the first time you'd seen a Cyberman hatch.
Yeah, never knew they grew
from little eggs. No.
Yeah. Aww. Normally, you'd think they just take people over.
Yeah.
So how does this work? Did they shrink them into the eggs and then they expanded again?
Well, what they did is they put a cyber egg and a cyber sperm in there and then let it do its thing.
Well, the Cybermats looked a little bit like a cyber sperm.
Right, yeah. Their plan was to get to Earth and invade.
Yeah.
This is quite an advanced Earth. They're not particularly advanced Cybermen.
No.
I can't imagine that invasion would have gone too well for Cybermen.
These were the arrow fodder. They were the sort of the ones that they could afford to lose because they were a bit weird and a bit thick. So they sent those to deal with this, and the ones who were in the ship behind were the super-duper Cybermen.
They were low-grade.
They really were.
Mark I Cybermen.
Oh, not even that. They were the equivalent of bendy vegetables and broken biscuits. That's what they were.
Okay.
But maybe if their plan was to infiltrate quietly and start converting people and zombify that way, just multiply. But I don't know. I can't see. Even if those Cybermen invaded today, they'd struggle with modern militaries, I think, frankly.
Jay, what did you think?
Oh, I don't really have too much to add on what Adam said. I mean, I do think that it was rather padded out. There were bits where it was... Or just things happening very, very slowly. That could have been easily compressed. I mean, definitely down to 4 episodes, if not 3. And yeah, I mean, the science was, well, I mean, let's just put that in inverted commas.
Keith, what about you? What he said?
Agree what they say, but yeah. I would also like to add the addendum of BBC. Please take notice of the animation.
Yes, no, it was a fun watch. As I say, it could be condensed down to 4 episodes, but I couldn't fault the animation.
I loved it. I agree. Yeah. Too long, but weren't they all? But otherwise, absolutely fantastic. Now, we'd like to know what you people think of The Wheel in Space. Write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo! Now, Adam, I think we had an issue with feedback, didn't we? Speaking of addresses.
We did.
What do you want people to do? what's happened?
Use a decent email server?
you can put it in friendlier words than that. Ooh.
There's not much people can do, really.
Basically, some feedback hasn't been getting through because the email server that it was sent from was aggressive.
Wasn't talking to.
Didn't have sender policy framework.
Couldn't be trusted. Yeah. So that's why, if you sent feedback, we've just ignored it because it hasn't reached us.
Complain to your ISP.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And now it's over to the dark side of the room, where Keith has a 30-second recommendation.
Dark side of the room?
Well, there's no light over that side.
Yeah, okay, I'll take that. Right, ladies, gentlemen, and germs. I would like to point out a free downloadable PDF, which is roughly about 400 pages long. And it is called We Have Engaged the Borg. It is done as an in-universe post-mortem of the Battle of Worf 359. It starts at the engagement at J-19, which was Q-Who, and dissects that. You then have the build-up to Worf 359, where you have interviews with... not interviews, but records of J.P. Hansen... interviews with Lieutenants Ensign Sonia Gomez, interviews with Geordi LaForge. You then have the Battle of Worf 359, which contains briefings from Starfleet Brass as they prepare for it. Mm-hmm. The actual battle itself, again, with various interviews with Guinan, Riker, Hugh... and a few others.
Jake.
We have an interview with Jake Sisko as well. You have flight recording entries of the actual battle on various ships, like the Hood, the both Melbournes, and a few other people. And then it does the post-mortem. What I love about this book, it corrects various mistakes that was made in the TV show, such as when in Best of Both Worlds you're told that the USS Melbourne is a Nebula class vessel that was going to be Riker's command, but he turned it down. In the first episode of DS9, which was The Emissary, you actually see a little bit of the Battle of Worf 359, where the Melbourne is an Excelsior class ship. What has happened, according to this book, what has happened is the Melbourne was about to be decommissioned. The Excelsior Melbourne was about to be decommissioned. The Excelsior Nebula cast was all but going to be commissioned. They just threw it together and threw it out there.
Okay.
So you basically got two Melbournes out there. Mm. It corrects all the little things. And there's one nice little touch in there which states that Starfleet and the civil administration arm of the Federation were basically infighting. The president at the time, the UFP president at the time, was all for negotiation and didn't see the point of having a large mobile Starfleet. So they were moving all the resources. In real time, is the Paramount company only had the models of the Miranda, the Excelsior, and the Oberth. So basically, they were all the old ships. Yeah. So they weren't in universe. They weren't commissioning new vessels. The Galaxy class was meant to be a 12 ship fleet. Mm-hmm. They reduced it to 6. It's a nice little sort of corrector, and as I said, because it's free, you can easily download it. Just go on Google and look for We Have Engaged the Borg.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that was Keith's 30-second recommendation.
30-second-ish.
5 minutes.
Sorry?
Sounds interesting.
It is. Hey, your hat's at a jaunty angle, but I can't hear... Oh, he said he would have sided with the Borg.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Is that because Handles has been whispering to him?
I think it might
obviously,
be.
Obviously, yeah.
1, 2, 3.
Hello, Head of Pertwee!
Low Handles.
Inky and Dinky McSquirtle.
And Rinky.
And Rinky.
Dave Zilla.
Clarence. Mm-hmm.
Various Nebulas.
Folded up and propped against the radiator, Clara.
Moomin.
Sandy. And
various
goats. Who's on a chair?
He is.
That's Valentino.
Valentino.
Oh, Sandy's down there.
Sandy's down there. They've stopped touching each other.
They have.
Inappropriately.
You hoovered, didn't you?
Dear listeners, we've been watching even more TV. Yes, we've been watching something that was originally on Sky One. It's called The Strangerers.
Pause for music. Right, confession. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched any of this.
Oh,
but
you said
I was going to, and then I chose not to.
Oh, so many people didn't do their homework this time.
Well, you can sit there and ask pointed questions.
Or I can sit here and look at, see how the football's going.
As was mentioned in the news, this one was done by...
Rob Grant.
Yes, one of the earlier things he did... After Red Dwarf, Red Dwarf. Mm-hmm. He did do Dark Ages the year before in 1999, as we mentioned. This was his second, I think, final thing for Sky One.
Yeah. I can't say I remember the Dark Ages.
No, I don't.
Doesn't ring any bells.
Even Keith's not that old. Sorry.
I remember watching this when it was first out.
Okay.
I do remember catching this.
Well, I was one of those poor benighted souls who never had Sky TV.
I don't think I saw it when it came out, but I was aware of it.
Yeah, and I had moved to North America by the time this had come out, so I don't think it made it across the pond.
I don't think it made it anywhere. Mm. It was never repeated as far as I'm aware. It's never been released on DVD because it's a Sky original. They didn't want to put it out on disc for some reason.
Mm.
And it's just stuck in this limbo where it's a lost series. You can find it if you look online. YouTube has got copies.
Right, the basic premise is these aliens, one commander and two cadets,
supervisor,
take on human form and come down to explore planet Earth, I'm assuming in the year 2000. This is the question.
This is not the Earth we know.
Definitely not.
It's more like a British version of North America.
You get the impression
it's
that...
Not even that. I mean, there's complete vague and inconsistencies behind just about everything in the environment. There's cars that have left-hand drive, there's cars that have right-hand drive.
And to my knowledge, I think nearly all the cars are circa 1950s, 1960s. They are not modern vehicles, or certainly modern for the year 2000.
Well, the first vehicle you see is one of those big American trucks.
It's a very weird combination.
It's a mishmash. Yeah. It's a strange mishmash.
It isn't meant to be our Earth, and apparently it's meant to be a totalitarian state.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Though, how you tell that particularly, obviously there's a weird government organisation who are going after the aliens.
Yeah, I think as far as the totalitarian government, there's things that are hinted to in the organisation people that are talking about it, particularly the bald-headed guy who's he's somewhat strange to begin with. And I think had this gone on for a second series, I think we might have found out a little bit more about him because...
Yes.
It was suggested that he may not be human.
Yeah, in the final episode or two, there's a hint that he's an alien.
But, all the license plates on the cars are all areas and whatever, so it's very rigid in terms of that kind of stuff, yeah.
There's no one, except for the two cadets, I think there's nobody there with any redeeming features whatsoever.
No.
Supervisor's okay.
Well, supervisor spends a lot of time just as a head.
Yeah.
And occasionally head and legs.
Yeah, that was a very weird effect, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The comedy really stems from these two space cadets trying to blend in as humans.
Well, it's a culture clash comedy.
Oh. Yeah.
The sleep ritual.
The eating ritual.
Yeah. The eyeless snake.
Yeah, the less said about that, the better. And it's a woman, so we must now doff our hat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even when they have their hands secured behind their back,
yeah,
they grab hold of the rims of their hat with their teeth.
And yeah. Yes, they spend an entire episode, I think, with chairs bolted to the back of their...
One is a chair and one is a steam press.
That's
true, yeah.
Actually, it's more than one episode, I think. It's like close to two.
It's one and a half episodes. It's one full episode and half an episode.
Yeah, it can't have been fun to film that.
Yeah. Sci-fi wise, there's quite a few recognisable faces because we have Paul Dallow playing a slime ball landlord
called CD.
Am I correct in saying that was Gareth Thomas?
In the first episode, there's Gareth Thomas
dressed
up as an American cop, a 1940s American cop.
Okay. I miss that was him.
The main two characters are
Mark Williams
and Jack Doherty.
Yeah. Mm, yeah. For some odd reason, they reminded me of the Thermians from Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean,
it's very much that attitude. Cause
yes, the whole, okay, walk. We've learned how to be human, and yes, they don't quite get it.
Oh, good grief, no. Mm-hmm. And the movements, one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, as you were saying, the walkings are up, forward, down, up, forward, down. The other leg, oh, yes!
They get a bit better as time goes on, but not much.
And also the briefcase that they carry around.
Oh, yes.
That seems to be dimensionally transcendental, but only when they open it.
Yeah, when other people open it, it appears to be empty,
it
seems. And in one point, they even climb inside it to hide.
Well, they pulled a ladder out.
It's
a bit like Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins. Yeah,
indeed.
The first episode is about an hour long.
Well, adverts, so probably about 45.
Yeah, 45, but to me, that was too long. It's better in the half-hour digestible chunks, which the rest of the series is.
Yeah, it's a common thing, isn't it, to do a double-length pilot episode. Yeah. And they were trying to pitch this as quite a high-end comedy drama. They were really going for it. They put a lot of money into it.
Oh,
$0.33 per episode, this time was a lot of money.
So you can see where the money is spent.
Yes.
But the script didn't hit me.
It's not up there with Red Dwarf.
No.
Where they'd go in the second season, I know where Rob Grant was wanting to take the plot, but I don't know how you continue doing the same character comedy as you were doing the first season all the way through another second season. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of felt it was almost going towards a natural conclusion by the end of that first season.
Yeah, but it got left on the cliffhanger.
It probably could have ended. I mean, there was a couple of loose ends in there that...
Yes.
Could have been tied up like the bald-headed guy in the organization.
Yeah.
If they'd have just omitted that completely, the allusions to him not being human, then, yeah, I mean, they could have easily just tied the first season up right there and then.
They could have done, yeah. But it was deliberately left on a cliffhanger to try to force Sky One to do a sequel, but didn't happen.
What I did find a surprise, because I didn't remember him from the first time round, Mark Heap.
Yes, from Spaced.
Not miscast, but certainly playing against type. He's certainly a hypochondriac, which is in his ball house, but he's more of the cooler type of person, the Mulder character.
Is he the most normal of all the characters?
Yeah.
Not saying much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you consider all the other things that he's been in, the painter in Spaced.
Yeah.
The neighbour in, what is that? I can't remember the name of it. There's some situation comedy he was in. Certainly not the heroic figure.
No.
Casting against type.
Yeah. Maybe before he was famous, before Spaced.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because Spaced was around the same sort of time, isn't it?
I think Spaced was 99, 2000, somewhere around there. I think. I'm not 100%
sure.
Because
that was soon after Phantom Menace, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Because I made a thing of that.
Second season was Phantom Menace.
Right, okay, yeah. And the other part of that duo was Sarah Alexander.
Yes.
And Coupling and stuff.
She's
like that.
A familiar face. She's been in quite a few things, as I said.
Presumably, completely unknown this time, is David Walliams.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Halfrid,
this was only about the third thing that he'd been in.
Right.
Yeah. He was one episode of Spaced he was in.
Right, okay.
Which I recognised him from. And it's certainly, I recognised the voice because he reutilised that from one of the characters later on.
It's almost like he was pre-doing a character for Little Britain. Right?
Yeah.
And even the supervisor, I recognised the voice more than the face.
Yeah.
Milton Jones, who does a lot of stuff for Radio 4.
I can see it now.
In fact, he does lots of pun type. per humour. Yeah.
And he never brushes his hair.
He's also did a lot of...
Mock the Week.
Thank you, Mock the Week.
Oh, does he? Okay.
Now, yeah. But yeah, I didn't recognise him. But now you mention it.
Yeah, I didn't recognise the face of the voice. I was amazed how old he is.
Yeah.
He's well into his 60s. You wouldn't know it. Look at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, an interesting series. I know it was offered to the BBC by Rob Grant, but they just picked up Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah.
Which is a very similar concept.
Which is very much the same. I think Third Rock from the Sun, for me, did it better. Did it a lot better.
A different sort of humour.
I agree.
I have to point out that Milton Jones is actually only 6 months older than Keith.
Thank you. I love you truly, deeply and completely.
I know. He's 61, so he's not well into his 60s, as Adam declared.
Love you.
But yes, in Third Rock of the Sun, you don't get them trying to hack off their genitals with
one episode, but they learned from that and didn't do it again.
Because it was sprouting.
It was. So overall, you weren't overly impressed.
It had potential.
Mm, yeah.
But
didn't live up to it.
I'm not sure if I watched it all the way through the first time. I can't remember.
I don't think many people did. I think by the end, the ratings are pretty low.
Yeah.
Sure, I didn't get a second season. Yeah, it's fun in its own way, but it is quite a grotesque series.
Definitely. Besides the cadets, there is no one that is redeemable in it. They're all either serial killers, self-serving, or murderers.
Mm. Mm. I think in the second season, we were going to find out a bit more about the world. Rob Grant was saying that it isn't Earth, it is some kind of test area. So artificially filled with humans, maybe, or something. It's somewhere where the cadets will come in and learn how to infiltrate Earth.
Oh.
That's where it's going, apparently. So that the reason the world is weird.
Yeah.
It's because it isn't the real world.
If that was the case, I think they could have tightened that up a little bit.
Yeah.
Introduced it to the latter half or towards the end of...
Yeah, that doesn't make too much sense because the supervisors were really not that well informed to begin with.
No.
I mean, the supervisor, she was all very well impressed at how sort of Cadets Niven and Flynn had actually managed to improve upon their knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Which they did, yeah. Mm. But it still is an artificial environment. We're not sure if it's their vegetable species which created it, or maybe it's the other species that the bald-headed guy was from.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There was stuff planned. I don't know quite what the details were going to be.
We'll never know.
We never know now, yeah.
Right, if anyone else was unfortunate enough to catch the Strangers when it escaped, write to us and tell us what you thought via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Do we have any feedback?
We do!
Oh. And it took quite a while to get here.
From Graham, I believe.
Hi, Graham.
Hello, Graham. Hello, Staggerers. Graham Sheridan here. Yes. You're asking for opinions on Star Trek Academy?
Oh, yeah. Let's get back.
Well, let's say this. I had already booked for my subscription to Paramount Plus to end. Then I heard about this show, so I went, before subscription ends, can't hurt, we'll have a look at the two episodes. Oh, bugger. Okay, cancel the cancel of the subscription and subscription to Paramount Plus is continued.
What a positive
great show. I mean, really great show. Thing is, usually I pick out a favourite character after some time. With Lower Decks, we can do a Star Trek comparison. That's Rutherford. The original series is Bones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a hard time to pick out a favourite character. They're all brilliant. Oh, and Thok, right, yeah.
Yes.
The dripping sarcasm. Reminded of instructors I had during my army time. You tried not to laugh because you know, or you knew, who they were actually trying to pick out. Oh, by the way, if you hear any sounds in the background, I'm on my rounds in the middle of the night, as per usual. So, anyway, the cadets all seem to be well picked out.
Mm-hmm.
Sam is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Genesis is one to keep an eye on, I think. And the other ones, well, I think are Klingon. Probably, well, seeing as we've just seen episode 4, the Klingon episode, after watching that, I had to go jump back to the original series, but the films, and rewatch Undiscovered Country.
Yes.
Because it had, I won't say a lot of parallels, but the Klingons had nowhere to live.
Yep.
And they were dying out. Well, see where that came from. So, yes, this show is at fault for me not cancelling my subscription to Paramount Plus. Now, on to other things I've been getting my interest of as of late. I got myself a new phone, as I was having a few problems with my older phones. And with that, it came with a few, here's a 3 month trial to certain fruit-based TV network.
A lot of good stuff on
so,
there.
Which I wasn't too upset about. So apart from rewatching a few things a couple of thousand times before it ran out, I like Ted Lasso.
Yep, it's good.
Yep.
Murderbot.
Yep.
Yep.
It's quite fun.
Now, a Murderbot TV series is based on a series of books, which, because of the TV series, I'm now going through one at a time each month through Audible. And the thing I have to say about the TV series is it has a very, very similar thing that The Martian has. So, Martian film compared to Martian book.
Yep.
Martian book ends, spoiler warnings, at his rescue. Film carries on, shows what happens afterwards.
Briefly.
Murderbot, the book ends at a similar point as The Martian book would. But the TV series is a bit more fleshed out at the end. I'm currently on book 4 and just started it, and literally we're not even a paragraph and a half in and I'm having a lot to laugh about. Now, the thing is, Murderbot is interesting for me because of some people in a certain community that, by the looks of it, I belong to. He's apparently very autistic coded, and I can see that because he has a certain affinity or a obsessive streak with a certain sci-fi themed TV show that seems to be based on a combination of Star Trek, The Orville and Galaxy Quest. Because it's so far in the future, it's done like some of those pulpy romance fiction books that are supposed to be out there for women with, even though it's sci-fi, it's like, I don't know, say it's Scottish-based, in our history, that sort of thing. Anyway, getting back to the show, I can highly recommend it. Alexander Skarsgård, his father is more well-known these days for being a certain scientist in a few Avengers films, but he was originally in a TV series called True Blood, where he played a vampire. So one last thing, because it's getting a bit long, the Bobbyverse series.
Oh, yeah.
The books are quite excellent. I recommend another book by the same author, Dennis E. Taylor, and it's called Flybot. With all the things with AI going on at the moment, this book is very of this moment as well. As the main character is researching stuff, there's an EMP burst in his office, and this fly drops out of the air. And looking at the fly, it's not a real fly. It's a robot fly that seems to be running on AI. And the book carries on. So, until the next time, wishing you all the best. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Glad you finally reached us.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I've read Flybot as well. It is very good.
Lead us out, Crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast. But never fear, in the next one, there'll be more of the same.
No more.
More fun, frivolity and jollity. More news and reviews. More who old and new. So until that...
R for Rob.
Rumbunctious.
Right rollicking.
Riveting.
Radished to within an inch of its life.
Ravished.
Robot.
Comes rambling.
Rapidly towards us.
This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Cheerio. Most gods throw dice, but fate plays chess, and you don't find out till it's too late that it's been playing with two queens all along.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, series 1, number 493, featuring Ad Purcell, Andy Simpkins, fake Keith J, and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente and fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
He's got a loose thingy.
Oh, it comes with age.
Yeah, certainly does.
By the time he's 60, it'll have fallen off completely.
Mine went west
ages.
Yours
fell off 2 years ago.
That's what I mean.
You wonder why your balance was off.
It explains so much. Well, if he's going to grab a tablet, I'm going to make sure my bladder is well ventilated before we
using
started.
What? It fell off 2 years ago, remember? You've been blaming the dog for the puddles.
I've got a tube.
Oh, good.
And no giggling.
3, 2, 1. I win! It's one of the advantages of not being able to see what they're doing. Why am I reminded of Dara O'Brien getting angry because the neutrinos?
Oh, the neutrinos
are
mutating.
Yeah.
We might get onto some of that in Wheel in Space, actually.
Yeah. I'm Fake Keith.
And I'm too
what?
Early.
And you,
the
you
story
bing,
of
you,
your life.
You bing-bonged halfway through.
I know.
Should we do that again? I found the Dropbox. Oops. No, I don't want to pay for it.
I've never paid for it in my life.
I don't know. No, why are you doing this to me? It's doing that and doesn't give me the option not to.
I just use the free one. I don't want to pay extra for
no,
it.
No, I don't want to, and it don't, yeah. Unless I'm blind.
Well.
Shut up.
Yeah, try and use the app.
I don't want to use the app.
Don't use the app. Don't use, just use the website.
Okay.
He's pouting.
Is he? Carry on, Adam. He is a pathetic excuse for a man whose penis fell off 2 years ago. And now he has a bit of hose. There's a
I love you. I just want you to know
joke
that.
There somewhere.
Are we talking about Knight of the Seven Kingdoms again?
That gives a hose pipe ban a whole different meaning.
But haven't you heard the hose pipe ban's been lifted?
Well.
Anyway, Adam. Jay?
Yes?
You're crinkling.
I am, yes.
Who's trying to be subtle?
Did you just have a sweetie, Jay?
I am trying to open a cough sweet.
Go
carry
on,
open
the
cough sweet.
We'll talk amongst ourselves.
Right.
Rhubarb, 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 rhubarb.
Do you remember Pacer mints? They were green and white striped.
No.
I loved a Pacer mint. They were like spearmint with vanilla.
Unusual combination.
Yeah, they were lovely.
I'm not a minty person.
You got two for a penny at Bunce's.
Yeah. Did you?
You did.
By George.
And they came in a pink and white striped bag.
As far as mints go, I like Altoids, but I can't easily get them over here.
You like what?
Altoids.
Isn't that something to do with a car engine?
No,
oh.
No.
Yeah, that rattling the Altoids.
It's a curiously strong mint that you can get easily in North America and is originally British. But
you can't get it over
you
here.
You can't get it over here.
Are they called
although
something else over here?
No, you can actually order them on Amazon.
Yeah.
But,
or go to any American candy shop.
Oh. Yeah, they don't sell them that in
stores. We'll have to look in Mr. Sims in County Mall. They have an American section.
Oh.
Are we doing Doctor Who for sure?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Really short Keith to carry on talking about gigantic genitalia.
There was enough of that last time.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
If that guy ever shows up at a convention, you're just going to blush and leave the room.
I am. I'm going to go and walk out.
Sure, he has done conventions. But
I am sure he has done a few.
If you do that in front of him and he goes, why? I'll go, he's seen your penis in close-up.
For 10.
And then amble off.
I don't think it was his, frankly. But
you can never be sure.
We'd have to have a check then, wouldn't we?
Who would be brave enough to do it?
Right, come on, strides down.
Anyway.